Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
You are listening to Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a podcast about Linux, open source, and amateur radio, for everyone. Now here are your hosts, Cheryl, W5MOO, Russ, K5TUX, and Bill, NE4RD.
Well, hello everybody and welcome. You have tuned into episode number 600 of Linux in the Ham Shack. Thank you for joining us here for our, what will proved to be a not very special episode of Linux in the Ham Shack, but we're glad you're here. We really appreciate it. And before we get to whatever it is we're going to talk about tonight, because we sort of haven't really talked about that yet, we'll go ahead and introduce ourselves. I'm Russ, K5TUX.
I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD.
All right. So yeah, we literally have no plan for this episode. I did talk to Bill slightly before the show, like 2 minutes before the show, or 2 minutes before the 15 minutes after the show was supposed to start. And said, I guess we can talk about, I think in all of these special episodes, we can make it like an AMA. So if anybody in the chat wants to ask us questions about the show, about us, about anything, you know, we'll be glad to answer. And then I threw out the concept of talking a little bit about AI.
The end of the world?
Yeah, the end of the world.
The end of the world as we know it.
Future of humanity or lack thereof or whatever. And mostly I'm going to bring that up because Bill has started me down the path toward destruction. he has gotten me into vibe coding, and I have been going absolutely crazy with it. But there was a thing that's been on my programming plate for years and years now. I started coding one, I don't know, probably 6 years ago. I'd say it was before COVID for sure. And got to a certain extent, and we actually had some code and was working and was doing some stuff. And then that lapsed and went away. And then with the advent of vibe coding, I figured I'd see if I could set, you know, the AI to help me flesh out the code and finish the project. And you know what? It's been immensely helpful. So, therefore, I'm being sucked in and will cause our demise. But, you know, I guess that's neither here nor there for now. I did have a conversation. Well, I didn't have a conversation, but there was some talk earlier in the hedonism chat. And, Howard mentioned that he had just bought some Michter's bourbon. The Sour Mash Whiskey. That's the one he bought.
Yeah.
And he asked if we had reviewed Michter's on the show. And I was like, well, I sure think so, because I've had the US 1 bourbon on my shelf for like ever and ever and ever. But I did a search through our archives and it did not come up. So do you recall talking about Michter's in the past? I feel like we have, but I don't
I have talked about Michter's rye before. I know for sure. But like half the time my stuff doesn't get put in there because it's like, it's the Bill whatever corner.
Well, right. But usually if you have something specific and you have any details about it, I try and at least, you know, list it.
Yeah. I know I've done the rye. I've talked about it on the show because I'm not a huge fan of it.
Well, I'm going to pop the cork on this. Let's see. Ah, very good.
Squeaky.
It was a little squeaky. This has been on the shelf since last May. I think that's when Cheryl and I went to Michter's. Was it a year and a half ago or 2.5? She's muted.
She's muted.
Yeah, I'm muted. We went to Michter's not May of 25.
But May of 24.
We went May of 24.
Right.
When we went to Louisville and kind of met up. Well, didn't meet up with Bill. Bill was there too, but we didn't manage. We met up at Hamvention. So, but
right.
Did we not pick up a bottle of, what did we pick up in Kansas City? Was that not
Michter's? That was Rieger.
No.
Okay.
You went to a liquor store. We drove halfway across Kansas City. Little tiny liquor store that you picked something up at. And I was thinking you got a bottle of Michter's there as well.
And that may have been the case, and maybe that's why I haven't reviewed it yet. I just thought I've had Michter's for a long time.
We bought one bottle of Michter's at Michter's, and it was a special. It was like a special edition or right. something.
That's what I have in my hand right now that I'm about to pour. That I just popped the cork.
Gotcha.
On.
Okay.
There's a special label. It has your and my name on it. It has right. a special barrel dump on it. And what this actually is the Fort Nelson Select Kentucky Straight Rye, single barrel. So this is not the kind of Michter's you can just pick up off the store shelves. It's a distillery exclusive. So I'm going to pour that. But since we were, you know, since Michter's was mentioned, I guess I figured it was time to pop this bottle since it has been, you know, almost 20 months, I guess, since we bought it. And it was interesting. I went to try and get the plastic cellophane wrap off the bottle, and there wasn't any because this is not a store purchase. They don't have to seal the cork. So that took a second. But anyway, this is, let me see, what's the proof on this? It is a single barrel, but I don't think it's particularly high proof. No, it says 42.4%. So that's interesting for a single barrel. I mean, I guess they can proof it down. It's just not a... It's not a barrel proof. And it's also a rye, which was why it was hard to find because it wasn't in the rye section. It was up on the top shelf. It took me like forever to find it. But I figured I'd crack this out right now and give it a sip and see how it is. And Bill is not drinking tonight, sadly, because it's too late for him. He's an old man in Florida right now. He's old Florida man.
Yeah, I should be in bed already.
But instead you're playing golf with alligators.
Yeah, exactly.
So did was that lie, that picture that you took? Did your ball just lie there and Sir Alligator was just where it happened to be?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't even pay attention to it. I just happened to notice when I got out of the cart to go hit my ball, I was like, oh, look, an alligator. That's so cute.
Luckily, it was far away enough that you could play through.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was pretty far away.
All right. It didn't look that far away. It looked close enough to make me wonder about playing if I were there.
I've probably played closer to them before when I was younger. But yeah, that's the first one I've seen in a while. I haven't really played when I've come down to Florida very often, but I have my clubs with me this time. So I said, screw it, I'm playing. So,
well, somebody had a little bit of forethought and decided maybe it's golf weather down in Florida, because it sure as hell isn't up here in Montana, I'm guessing. So,
yeah, you know, the days are waning, but, you know, as long as there's no snow on the ground, it's still golf weather in Montana.
Oh, you know, it's the same here in Missouri. If there's no snow on the ground, or even in some cases, if there is.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can still see the fairways and the greens, it's technically golf weather here. So,
yeah. I have definitely played in the snow before and played while it started to snow and finished the round. I said, screw it, I'm finishing. But they don't have that problem down here. So
No, because you're down around Naples, and that's it's still warm down there, I guess.
Yeah, that's pretty warm. Although my parents are complaining because it's cold at night, which is, you know, I think it gets to 70.
That's coming for all of us, I know. So
they're like, oh, it's so cold. And it's like, no, I'm still sweating.
So this Michter's Rye, this Port Nelson Select single barrel is really good. And I will do a formal review of it on the next Weekender. So I'll be enjoying that. But cool. This is episode number 600. And we have been doing this for just a shade over 17 years now. So, and I know we talked about this before, but you came in at episode like 130 something, right?
168.
Oh, 168. Okay.
Yes.
But that was still a very long time ago.
So, 9 years ago. Yeah. A little over 9 years ago.
Yeah. So it hardly feels like there was anyone else on the show except for like all the other people.
Yeah. Yeah. The remainder of whatever the 8 years there that I wasn't around.
Especially, you know, Richard, of course, who started this whole mess. So, But yeah, it's been an interesting 17 years up till now, I think. And with any luck, we'll be going for, I don't know, about 17 more. I think I may want to give up on it before then. But let's see, in 17 years, I'll be in my early 70s. So, yeah, may not be podcasting then. I don't know. There may not be a world then. So,
yeah, speaking of AI, great segue.
Oh, I thought you were going to speak about AI. I was wrapped.
So let's talk a little bit about what you've been using and stuff like that. I can talk into a little bit about mine as well. I guess I'm the one that sort of provoked you because I started playing around with Warp, which I guess is Warpinator. No, it's just Warp, right? Warpinator, something totally
Warp, different. Like Warp Terminal is the actual application on Linux. So.
Right. And Warp Terminal basically is, you know, like has like multiple agents that you connect to. You get like a little bit of a free use and stuff like that if you want to play with it. I initially installed it on my computer, really just on my Mac, just so I can have a terminal that doesn't look like crap, like the Mac terminal does. So, and then I started playing with some of the features, and then I was like, let me sign up for this stupid base level account and I'll start, you know, using it for stuff and just kind of playing around. And I kind of got a little interesting digging into it, kind of messing around with some coding projects and some transitional, like taking a project that's coded for a different UI and have it recode the front end and everything else like that. It's definitely interesting. There are some, you know, detractors for it as like your base level thing, if that's what you're using it for, is just coding and stuff like that. One, it uses some of the older models for coding, and but you can augment it with your own API keys for your specific, you know, model, whether you want to use Claude or something like that. So you can kind of double down, have the terminal, and then bring in the features for something else that you pay for, whether that be OpenAI, Claude, what have you. But I think it's pretty interesting and fun. The more I've used Claude code and stuff like that separate from Warp, I see where a lot of like the inspiration was from and stuff like that, because they operate very similarly within the context of the command line interface. The two projects that I worked on with it, which I'm still sort of in progress with, was funny enough, the one that we talked about not too long ago, Skyroof. I actually started a port using Warp to do that, and it got pretty far. It actually has a full UI, does have some SDR tracing working, although the SDR is kind of still wonky. I have some of the other components, like the rig control and stuff like that, is sort of working. So, and then I kind of just paused because I started working on porting MTTY to something that I could use in Linux. And MTTY is actually open source as well, but it's only built for Windows, and it's for doing RIDI. I started messing around with that, and I have that pretty far along as well. And hopefully, I'm hopefully going to get both of those two projects actually working this month. I just haven't had any time to go back and mess with them. But those are the two things that I've started playing with, and that was just using Warp. I haven't actually thrown Claude directly on it. I do have a Claude account as well. I was kind of going to do a comparison to see how well one versus the other does, but I'm not sure that would be a good comparison. But that's kind of the vibe coding that I've done with the project. Was basically evaluating an existing project and then start to port it to doing more cross-platform stuff. But I gather that you're working on something completely different.
I am working on something completely different. Like I said, it's a project I started several years ago and let lapse and didn't really come back to it because I didn't have the time. But I figured since we have these AI agents now, I might be able to throw it at the project and see if it can do something for me. So I actually just trashed all the old code and started fresh. So my project was actually built using Warp from the ground up, and which is probably why I've gone through so many credits, because while it does do things quite well, you have to spend a lot of time being nitpicky with it. So it will, you know, fix little bugs and stuff like that. And I've noticed that it can actually make mistakes. Like it has made some coding updates that actually generate like syntax errors and stuff when it's doing the code. And then you have to go tell it to go find those errors and fix them and stuff like that. Now, as far as you're using things like Claude and ChatGPT and stuff like that, my understanding is that Warp Terminal actually leverages all of those LLMs. And like, there's a little drop down in the bottom of the Warp Terminal where you can actually select which agent you're using, or it will sort of auto select, I guess, based on which one it thinks is the best for whatever project you're doing. I think it uses the Claude model for what it's doing for me, which is a PHP application using JavaScript. And I know it's all the stuff that Bill hates, which is fine. I could have started, since I was doing it from the ground up, I could have had to do the whole thing in like Python or Rust or whatever, but PHP is my strong suit. So I was doing this based on the idea that once Warp got me to a point where everything was sort of working and stuff, then I could just drop using the AI and just make future modifications myself. Which, you know, was sort of the way that went. And then the whole thing is actually, I mean, I used the Warp thing to not only generate the code, but also help me get the Git repo set up and manage all the commits and the branches and the tagging and blah, 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 blah. And it's actually up under my user account on GitHub. It's a public project and you can use it if it's something you need. And since we haven't talked about what it actually is yet, I guess I'll go there. What it is, it's a food and ingredient database manager. We have here at the house, we have lots of locations that contain food. We have lots of locations that contain ingredients. And we also want to keep track of stuff because we can't remember from day to day if there's like hamburger in the freezer. And it makes trying to figure out like what you're going to make, what you have stuff to make with, and all that very difficult. So I wanted to have something where you could keep track of all that and do it in a sensible way, and also allow for like efficient data entry, because you can spend a lot of time plugging individual items into a database, of course. And then once you got all your data in, then of course it's easy to manage. But I included some features that allow it to bulk add items. It allows you to keep place things in multiple places. It keeps track of allergen information. It gives you low quantity alerts. It allows you to do meal tracking. Pretty soon I'm going to put in like a grocery list feature, so you can see all the things you're out of or nearly out of, and it will give you a list that you can take to the grocery store and buy stuff. The last thing I threw into it is it's integrated with the USDA nutrition information database, so you can find out all the nutrition information about anything you stick in the database. And it's got a nice responsive Web 2.0 UI. It's dark themed, of course, because that's where I live. And if you want to check this project out, like I said, it's public up on GitHub, and we have been playing with it for the last couple of days extensively, putting data into it and working with our inventory here. And it's so easy to manage, you know, what you have, where it is, remove things when you use it, change where something is if you do that, if you move it from one place to another. And obviously it requires some human interaction because you have to tell it, you know, what you've been doing. But since it's responsive, you can do it on a phone. So if you're in the refrigerator and you're going to make a meal that uses like paprika, onions, and hamburger, you can just tell it that and it will update everything. And it's pretty slick. I've gotten, I would say, 90% of the bugs out of it. Obviously we're testing the hell out of it and trying to get it to where it's reasonable. I think the most recent tag I put was version 1 release candidate 2 out there. So it's pretty usable. It's pretty workable. I'm hammering out all the bugs. I had a list of 11 bugs that I need to fix. I think I'm down to one. So it's pretty cool. I love it. And the vibe coding has made a project that was taking me months and months and months to put together. I did it in about 6 days to get it to a point where I think it's nearly ready for actual production use. So, I mean, I did have to go up a little bit on my AI credits because using Warp Terminal is not free. Your interactions with the AI cost a little, you know, some credits for each interaction. They start you off at the $18 a month level, which is $2,500. And I got to $2,500 pretty quick. I'm still at about $6,000, so I've got quite a margin to go before it resets in the middle of this month. But it has taken it, I've interacted with the thing a lot. So, but one thing it has given me is a very clear understanding of how Git works. And when I was trying to learn Git on my own without having really a project to work on, I was really having issues with that. But maintaining repos now and branches and tags and setting releases and doing change logs and setting licenses and branching for fixes and remerging and stuff like that is all stuff I actually completely understand now just from using the AI coder. So it's been great for me, and I'm digging it. So maybe I'm hastening the end of humanity. I don't know, but I really like doing it. So that's what I've been doing.
No, that sounds awesome. I mean, that's really what, that's what you should be doing, right? You know, you should be using AI to solve problems and stuff like that. It just comes at a cost.
Yeah, I guess we're all not really sure what that cost is yet. Some people are very pessimistic and think, like we've been joking about, that AI will take over, and other people are a little less scared of where AI is taking us. They think it's is only useful and dangerous, I guess, up to a point. And at that point, there will always need to be some sort of human interaction, and therefore it can never be our, you know, overlords or whatever. But at least as far as just getting some projects done and writing some relatively decent code, it's actually showed me how to more securely code PHP too, and keeping a lot of the engine that runs the data manipulation and stuff like that out of the public code, and really only putting what needs to be seen for the visuals into the web server space, and all the rest of it is inaccessible, which is something you definitely should do, and is something I haven't been real good at in prior coding endeavors. But it seems to be very thoughtful about security when it puts together code. And actually, the code that it implemented for this particular food inventory database uses a full authentication scheme and everything. It manages users groups, allows for restricted access and all kinds of stuff. So you can actually have multiple, you can actually put it up on a production server and allow multiple people to have different inventories in the same instance, which is really nice. That's some pretty complicated code, and it does it reasonably effortlessly. So I've been enjoying it.
So it's like multi-tenancy and stuff like that, where like different people can all be using the same database and same system, and they're isolated from each other because of their permissions and groups.
Yes, absolutely.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds really neat. I'll have to check that out and stuff like that. Yeah, as you get into like some of the, you know, more detailed uses of these kind of tools, I know Claude is very pretty good with this. Is actually you can set up multiple agents to be responsible for various pieces of your project. You can have, you know, you can have your developer, you can have your cybersecurity specialist that will pen test your code. You can have an integrations QA person that writes integration tests and executes those against your code. And you can actually have multiple. You can build an entire software development team and sick, you know, 7-8 agents at a single project and work it from start to finish based upon a project manager or, you know, a product owner that is also an agent, and is given a very specific set of instructions. So you can define all these tasks, and then it does take a little bit longer to develop a code against that way, but you run into less context issues once you start separating the work out and running things in parallel. But that's normally with just the more advanced agents, and you'll probably hit pro level costs pretty quickly. So don't expect that to work on an entry level account or the $20 a month count. But there's a lot of potential for kind of having this thing kind of work against itself, and then you can work out those bugs, like when it writes syntactical issues or it writes code in a very inconsistent manner. You have something doing code review, and that's all it does is it looks at the code and it says, no, this is not consistent, and sends it back, and it will actually reject its pull requests and stuff like that. So you can get very, very into the weeds really quick on this stuff. And that means also burning lots and lots of compute power, which I think is probably what most people have issues with in general, besides the whole fact that it's, they don't make any money doing this. Just reading an article today is like, is OpenAI too big to fail kind of thing. And it's like, the last time we heard this, there was a huge economy collapse. So I'm hoping, for at least the economy's sake, I think like the market right now is propped up by all these AI companies. If we were to see a few $1 trillion fall out of the market, it wouldn't be a happy day for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not like it isn't fraught with some perils. You just kind of have to roll with that for right now and hope there isn't some sort of like AI bubble that explodes and causes a massive, financial collapse. But to go back to something a little less, sinister. one of the things that I love about the vibe coding thing, is how much data it actually has, because this last feature that I wanted to implement in my code was I wanted to have it link against the API for the USDA food ingredients database. And I wanted it to be able to, if you show a food in the database, you could simply click on it and see all of the nutrition information. And the USDA provides that information in an API. You can get a free API key, and you get up to, I think it's 1,000 requests a day against it using a single API key. So it seemed like a really good resource to implement that information, and it would be handy for people who are tracking food and ingredients and things like that. And so with, I think it was less than five prompts, the first one being, hey, do you know about the USDA nutrition database information and can you implement it? And it could and did. A single prompt set the whole thing up. I had to tweak a couple of things, including the fact that the database only maintains metric information. And I told it, there's only metric information in the database. I asked it if there was also like imperial unit data in the database, and it said no, but here, let me create a conversion table for you. I was like, okay. So, to be able to prototype that and get it to a state of readiness in less than 10 minutes from no code at all, using an external API, was pretty astounding to me, actually. And it did the whole thing in pop-ups, and it actually implemented all the error checking and everything. So like it set up a demo key by default and said, it pops up a warning and said, you only have so many API calls per day, and it gives you a link to get your own free API key and everything. And it implemented all of that without me asking for it. So it's pretty cool, I got to say.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it'd be interesting to see too, like exactly how it organized that code and stuff like that. Cause like that sort of telling too of like how it thinks your project should be organized and how it should be using reusable spaces in your code and stuff like that. And since I haven't done a PHP project in forever, I don't even know what it's supposed to look like anymore.
Well, so. I know it looks a lot different than I would have done it, but I have gone through the code. And of course, if you want to go through the code, it's up on GitHub, and of course it's GPL licensed, so you can look and modify the code all you want. But if you want to see what it thought was the way to best organize the code, it's all out there.
Cool. Well, I'll definitely be doing that.
All right.
I'll have my agent talk to your agent.
That's funny. Yeah. I mean, before that, all I was using AI for was image generation. I know we've had a few comments on the show about the fact that I use Midjourney to create the episode slides, the cover images, the cover art for our episodes. And, you know, I look back at some of the very early ones that it did back when it would think it was the V3 model, and they're up to 7 now and working on 8. And if you look at the images it generated in V3 versus the images it generates in V7, it's incredible. The vast improvement is unreal. You know, it used to have, everybody knows all those things that you used to look out for, like, you know, people with 3 legs and 7 fingers and stuff like that. It didn't really have sort of a good idea, because it's basically just pulling stuff out of like individual pixels and resolves them into a picture. If you see any of those videos or whatever that show you how AI pictures are generated, it's kind of hard to believe that it makes images the way that it does. But it also doesn't really conceptualize things as things. Like, it just sort of knows what something is supposed to kind of look like, and then it goes off on its own, and it could render things really weirdly. So the coders have to put big constraints on the data and say that, you know, if someone asks for like a picture of a human being, that it has the normal features of a human being, but the attributes of an object aren't really known by the model. It just has to sort of infer from all the data it's been fed. So getting it to the point where it can actually sort of more realistically generate things is really interesting. I saw one thing, I think it was on, it was a video on YouTube or something, about a guy who was trying to get an AI image modeler to create an image of a full glass of wine. And it was impossible, because it's sort of, you know, the AI knew what a glass of wine was and knew how to render it, but it only knew how to render it as half full. Because it couldn't conceptualize full versus, you know, half empty. So he would always, no matter what prompt he gave it, it would always show a half empty glass, and nothing you could tell it to do would create a full glass, because it couldn't conceptualize that. So it's interesting how the models
can't do that either. So,
well, that's true. Full glasses of wine, those are almost inconceivable, right?
Yeah.
Like full glasses of whiskey or beer or.
Yeah. It's all on perspective.
Yep, absolutely. I think there's a lot of fun stuff to play with. I've also done a little bit with AI-generated music. I haven't really explored that, but the one thing I have been playing with lately is AI-generated karaoke files, and that thing is freaking amazing. Back in the day, we did a lot of karaoke, and you would have to rely on whatever karaoke files were kind of out there for the people who created them. There were a few companies like Sunfly and stuff that generated karaoke files, where they would have to go through and process the data, remove the vocals, sync up the text and everything, and get it to work. And now there's an AI where you give it a song file and a lyric sheet, and it just does it. And it's really good at it. Surprisingly good at it. Like, the vocal removal in the AI processor is like so much better than just doing the track inversion and removing the center channel. Because doing it that way, you lose a lot of the music part too. But the AI actually splits out an MP3 file into the individual music tracks, you know, in an AI way, and then just removes the vocal track. So that is just amazing. And they don't charge that much for it. It's a paid feature, just like a lot of these AI things are. But what it does is absolutely amazing, and I've created some great karaoke files, because, you know, sometimes the songs you want to sing don't exist, so you have to make your own. And before, that process was long, tedious, agonizing, and took, you know, more time than you'd ever want to spend actually doing it. But now these AIs do it in under a couple of minutes. So, no comments. Good.
I was going to see how long the silence would last.
Well, we can AI remove the silence.
Yes, we do that anyway, right? Well, not with AI, but, you know.
Not with AI. Yeah. Using an actual algorithm.
Yes, looking for those dips in the audio.
So Darren, back a while, said Pete was on, when Pete was on, he sent him a tape measure that had metric and imperial measurements on it. Yeah. That's interesting. See, most of the tape measures I have actually do have inches and centimeters on them. So it's not really, that's not really a thing for me anyway. Aren't they all kind of like that anymore? I haven't seen one just imperial units on it in a while.
Yeah, I think you can normally have it with both. Now I'm looking at a ruler right in front of me. That's both. Of course, rulers are generally both. Tape measures, yeah. Most of the time, yeah. Most of the time, like the upper is like imperial and the bottom half is
metric. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. So I bet Cheryl doesn't have any thoughts on AI specifically because I don't think she's really used it in any way. Although she might have used it in a, like, without knowing it kind of way, in the same way that a lot of set-top boxes run Linux and so on. But what do you think of what it's done so far, like with our inventory database?
I'm really impressed with it. So until I got the syntax error earlier, right. Which I guess seeing you fixed.
I did fix that. Yeah, that's those syntax errors are definitely something that AI can handle pretty well. So it's more of the conceptual and feature generation stuff that takes a little bit. But I did mention earlier that I thought it was interesting that the AIs can make mistakes because that happened. Like the database was working perfectly fine. I asked it to update something else and then there was a syntax error. Like it somehow broke code it wasn't working on. Or I guess it was updating a file that it was using partially, but it was working on something else. And in so doing somehow put multiple else's sequentially in a file and that created a PHP syntactical error. So it's, in many ways, it's definitely not perfect.
Yeah, they definitely make a lot of errors. So, I mean, don't expect everything to be, you know, totally clean code. You go through many permutations of stuff, which also burn your credits because you go through those cycles of, oh, this didn't compile. Let me try this. And if you start doing stuff with, you know, a graphical user interface that, you know, it can't really see, it can only look at debug information and stuff like that, it gets a little bit more squirrely. So I'm almost regretting doing a couple of GUI applications because it's not good. It's not good. It does run into problems that it can't readily fix or see. And then you end up in a vicious cycle of, let me put some debug code in here and run it in debug. And then it, you know, basically breaks all the existing code that it had in there and then forgets to put it back. And then you have to kind of go through various circles to get the code back into the original state and just get back to the one broken thing and have it focus on the one broken thing.
Yeah, it does actually understand sort of like, I don't know what you'd call them, like color commands. Like you can, you know, you can ask it to do things like create a routine that does X thing, but you can also tell it like, hey, anytime you have done a thing and you actually have updated the code, then automatically commit this to the Git repo and, you know, create a commit change. And it will understand that. And it'll say, well, okay, from now on, when I do something, I'll commit it. And that's worked really well. And I created my own problem with doing some of the updating on my thing is because I'm working with a local repository. I'm not having it edit code on the production machine. So anytime it makes a change, I manually push it up and then I do my testing there. And then if there's a problem, I'll say, oh, there's a problem here because I changed a configuration variable. And then it looks at the local version of the code and says, I don't see that. And I have to tell it, no, I'm not doing it here. I'm doing it there. You just have to take my word for it. And, you know, it sort of understands. But, yeah, you can make your own issues if you're not careful.
Well, see, it's a perfect example where you need to have an agent just doing the QA integration tests on it, you know, like spinning up poetry or something like that and hitting the website and actually running a live copy of it to write functional tests against the software.
Well, that's a level of this I have not achieved yet, but I definitely probably should look at it because if it can do, you know, if it can have eyes on it and do the code testing instead of having me do it, that would be great. But that's probably going to burn through some credits. So
credits, you know.
Well, if I get out of this to where it's reasonably functional and reasonably bug free for what money I've thrown at it this far, which is really not that much, I'll be super happy with it. So, and then I can go back and, you know, to the $18 a month plan or whatever, and be a little more sensible with my AI use from here on out.
Yeah, keep it siloed into smaller smaller projects, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I did throw it at a project that I built for work and had it, I haven't really done anything with it, but I had it like look over the code and, you know, make suggestions about what I thought might be like a more secure way to do it, or, you know, have a better integrated configuration system and stuff like that. And it's given me lots of ideas about how to make my code better and more efficient. So it's been useful in that way too.
Well, just make sure there's no, you know, API keys or anything else that it can see in your code or passwords and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't fed it any live data because, I don't want it to have access to any of that. But
yeah, that would be not good, not good, not good.
Yep. All right, that's pretty cool. I mean, that's what I've been doing lately with the AI. I leverage it in many different ways, and I've been enjoying what I do. It's interesting to hear about how other people use it and where they think it's going, and what caveats we might have to look out for in the future of, you know, large language models and these ways that AI integrate into our daily lives. But I don't know. For now, I'm gonna ride the wave, I guess.
Enjoy it while it lasts.
Exactly. Well, that's really all I wanted to talk about. I mean, we could talk about the show, but honestly, you know, we're moving on 600 episodes in, and I've enjoyed the 17 years we've been doing this. I don't see anything changing in the foreseeable future. I mean, we'll definitely be making it out to Hamvention, maybe some other Hamfest if we get the opportunity. We're always on Discord to interact with our community and the people who listen to us. We hope to put out more YouTube content in the future. I don't know, maybe we'll be using AI for that at some point too. Who knows? And
be all Sora content.
Yeah, well, anyway, we look forward to putting out lots more content, and any interaction we get from listeners is very welcome. And the next time we do a show will be on episode number 601, and we'll hit a deep dive on some kind of ham radio related or, you know, Linux related topic. And we'll just keep plugging on here as long as people are interested. And, that's all I have to say about that. Anybody want to add anything before we wrap this thing up here? I think we've talked long enough.
Yeah, send us more feedback, show topic suggestions, and more picker wheel suggestions for the weekenders, because we're starting to run low on topics there too. So the more you can send in, the more opportunity we have to use those topics.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if it's something you're really interested in. If you have a specific question about a topic that we might be able to address, like an application, a how-to kind of thing, we'd be happy to address those. Philosophical questions always work good. Anything related to hedonism, we always like throwing those in every once in a while. So any kind of feedback you want to send us, we'd appreciate it. And as long as it's constructive, we won't get angry. So
we probably won't get angry anyway.
Yeah, probably not. I don't know. Our detractors are some of the most fun we have on the show, I think. So
yeah, someone commented on the Commodore OS Vision video, "What a third class review, just a waste of time." So I sent back, "Thanks for the feedback." It's like, yeah, I recorded it in a hotel room before Hamvention. It wasn't meant to be a thorough review of the product and stuff like that. But I'm glad you acknowledge the fact that I didn't do a deep dive review of Commodore OS Vision 3.
Well, you could have told me how to third rate comment.
Yeah, no. Arguing on the internet. Ha, ha, ha.
We could have said, thanks for the third rate comment, and, you know, accepted that.
Yeah.
I would dignify that.
Exactly. There's some hills you don't need to die on. So, all right. Well, anyway, Cheryl, do you have anything else to contribute before we wrap this up?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Well, with that, we'll go ahead and wrap this up. I want to thank Darren and Dawn for being here to listen to us live for our 600th episode. This will be coming out shortly, of course, and you'll get a chance to listen to it then. And in a week's time, we will have episode number 601, and we hope you'll join us again for that. for our next deep dive. In the meantime, we'll let you get back to whatever it was you were doing. Hope you have a great week, and we'll talk to you all very soon. And for this episode, number 600 of Linux in the Ham Shack, I'm Russ, K5TUX.
I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD73.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a community-sponsored podcast. Live recordings are Sunday nights at 8 o'clock Central Time. Our homepage can be found at lhspodcast.info. You can support the podcast via Patreon at patreon.com/lhspodcast. We're also on Discord, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Mastodon. Contact us via email at info@lhspodcast.info or via voicemail at 1-909-547-7469. That's 1-909-LHS-SHOW. We also have merch. So until next we meet, remember to always heed your hedonism.